Hello and welcome to the Courtney Turner podcast. So before I introduce my wonderful guest today, I'm super excited to bring her on. We've had some great conversations in person and I'm looking forward to this one where we get to share with all of you. And before I bring her on and introduce her, I want to invite you to go to the links below or to my website and to support the podcast, because we really appreciate any support possible. I have a Give, Send, Go up there now. We have just direct ways you can support Element. I'm a huge fan of Element. I love all of their flavors and I'm a saltaholic anyway, but it really does help with most of us do not get enough salt, potassium, magnesium. And this is a great way to supplement. So you can do that in a way that's really tasty. So we also have, this is a really great crowd rank. So it's kind of like you create your own aggregate of news, because as we know, the current media funnels lots of propaganda, but this is a way that we can aggregate news and share news and support each other's work. So I highly recommend you check that and add me to your crowd and send me some love there. Then we have the Relax the Sauna. It is chilly here. Actually, it's a beautiful day today, but it is winter and I love these saunas. They're pretty portable. You can keep your head out, which is kind of nice if you're, midday and you don't want to get your hair all messed up or your makeup running for the ladies. It warms up pretty quickly and it is pretty portable, so you can move it around. So that's a great one. And then, of course, the Richard Nutrition Center. So you can get your apricot seeds or laetrels, B17 essentially, which of course John Richardson's father was the one who introduced Richard G. Edward Griffin, who is my 300th episode. I'm really hoping we're going to get another episode with him when we go to the Red Pill Expo. I called him the OG Red Pill guy, and that was my first question to him, actually. So check out that episode. But you can use the discount code QUARTZ to get your apricot seeds there. My code is QUARTZ pretty much all around. So, yeah. And of course, EMF rocks, you mitigate against the, electromagnetic field radiation that we're bombarded with currently. On the side there, that's just the Buy Me a Coffee. You can use that. And this is, of course, Honey Colony, which is Miriam. We've done several shows together. She's a phenomenal investigative journalist, but she is also the founder of Honey Colony. And these are natural products that she has helped to create. She is a functional medicine coach. So she designs very holistic, high-quality products. And it's a great way to support both of us there and get discount on great quality products there. And then, of course, Brave TV. I've had Dr. Jason Dean on a few times, and this is showcasing his full moon protocol, because I think if you're living, breathing, you are probably experiencing some hosting of parasites. And this is I love CellCore products. I personally use them, so I can speak to, I've had other parasite cleanses where I had Herxheimer reactions, and those are not fun. If any of you have ever experienced it, I don't recommend it. They're really not pleasant. I did not have that with these. So these were, I think, I had a great experience with them personally. And of course, Make Honey Great Again, all the donations go to the J6 victims, the political prisoners, to support them. And you can just send me a Venmo or buy me a coffee. So anyway, now I've gone through all of them, but really anything. And you can also just support by liking and sharing and subscribing and spreading the word. So without further ado, let me introduce my phenomenal guest. It is Dr. Lynn Lafferty. She is an insider endowed professor at Nova Southeastern University. She's a doctor of pharmacy, licensed pharmacist, naturopathic doctor, and master herbalist, diplomat in clinical nutrition, and chef who is committed to finding the safest, most effective means to promote health and wellness over disease and illness. And I love this because I think the allopathic medical industry has really trained so many of us to have a pill for an ill. And unfortunately, what they don't teach us is oftentimes those pills come with side effects, and that none of them are really, completely without that. So there's always some sort of a risk, and that is often not shared when so many patients are put on upwards of, I think Americans on average are I don't even know the number, but I remember Dr. Lee Merritt saying that she found it not uncommon to have elderly patients on 25 medications at once. And that's just astronomical. And for us to think that there's no consequence to that would just be, I think, very naive. So I'm going to bring her on. Dr. Lynn Lafferty, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Courtney. It's great to see you. And I love listening about your products because I think I'd like all of them, especially that sauna to get into would be nice. Even though I live in Florida and it's warm, I still love a nice sauna.
I do too. Yeah, I'm always cold. Yeah, which probably says something about some of my makeup. But yeah, I love saunas. That was actually one of our engagement gifts. My fiance gave me a sauna when we first got engaged. So,
oh, nice. Decent, big man. Smart man.
Yeah. So I titled this, why the medical industry is, why we need to exit the medical industry. So tell me, why do you think that?
What's
wrong with modern medicine? Yeah.
Right. Okay. I went to school back in the 80s and, 70s, actually, and then I graduated in 1981 from pharmacy school at University of Georgia, then Medical College of Georgia. And back then, we took courses that were foundational, like 2 years of biochemistry, to really learn what chemicals are needed for your body. And actually, there really wasn't a nutritionist back then. It was more of home ec professors or graduates that did nutrition consultations. And then the pharmacists would do the consultations in the hospital, and especially the IV medicines, that the nutrition consultation. And then we took a year of physiology, medical physiology, and we walked in the first day of school and they said, well, a third of you will be flunked out of this school. We're like, we have 3.7 averages in calculus and physics, and actually my physiology professor flunked a third of the class out. And the reason being is she made you understand that the body was very logical and systems based. So she might say, I remember this question, and I've saved a lot of people from getting ablations on their heart from it. One of the questions was, if you have Addison, what happens to the QRS wave in the heart? And so I told that question to a cardiologist. He's a functional cardiologist. So it moves. He is outside the box a little bit in cardiology. And he said, you were asked that question. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, I don't know one cardiologist that could answer that question. And I said, I know. And I said, they've taken medical physiology out of the medical school and pharmacy school curriculum about 12 to 15 years ago. And then they've taken out biochemistry. Pharmacy school still has biochemistry, but they've taken it out of medical school. And then we used to take 1 year of pharmacology, which talked about what do the drugs look like? What are their side effects? What all the uses are? So you might find a lot of things about hydroxychloroquine in our books or as a matter of fact, I have our pharmacology textbook here. You see how thick it is.
Wow. Yeah.
It weighs about 10 pounds. You could do a nice exercise with it. And I also have here the physician desk reference. So every pharmacy by law had to have this in physician's office. This is from 1979. And I have a lot of bookmarks in here because those are companies that made things like digestive enzymes. So there's 11 or 12 companies in there that made digestive enzymes prescription. Why? Because there were many studies that showed as you age, you lose digestive enzymes. So you don't need an acid. You don't need a proton pump inhibitor or H2 blocker or all these other things. What you need is a digestive enzyme to help you digest you may not have enough stomach acid or whatever. So there was stomach acid in there, was a prescription product back in the day. There are also animal tissues were used. Of course, the only thing they still have left is a desiccated cow thyroid that's called armor thyroid, or there's a lot of different names for it, but that's the only tissue that we still sell as a prescription. But we used to have desiccated adrenal. My doctor, when I was a kid, was so old, he graduated in 1897 from the University of Vienna. He actually had Sigmund Freud as a professor. And
what?
Can you hear me? And I know a lot about him because his daughter was my godmother. She since has passed too, but we would talk
Anna
about.
Freud?
Huh?
Anna? Wait, whose daughter was your?
No. Oh. Doctor had Sigmund Freud as a professor at the University of Vienna in the 1800s.
Okay.
And then his daughter, my doctor's daughter, Dr. Trinka, his name was, she was my godmother. So I knew a lot about him even after he died and how much he learned and really knew nutrition. And also he would give us licorice tablets. And, you know, if you look in the research, you'll find that licorice kills H. pylori. It kills COVID. So there's so many different things that was used for. But he knew, because we had viruses, and he also knew that the adrenal gland played a pivotal role in getting better from infections. And I still use those things. There's a company I use that's been around since 1929 and have products like nobody else in the world. And that man actually had the FDA burn all his books and things back in the 60s. There were a lot of doctors in the 30s that had a lot of good information. They knew a lot. And Harvard, and he came up with this idea called protomorphogen, and he made products back in the 30s. And Oxford and Harvard are just now studying them. And actually, the scientist from that company sent a letter to Oxford and said, "Where did you come up with that name protomorphogen?" And they go, "Oh, we just thought of it." And they're like, "Well, I don't think so. We've had that name since the 1930s. The owner of that company allowed me to go back and look at I went through all his file cabinets, and they have an extraordinary library of things that he read. Half of his books were scientific and the other half of his books were spiritual. And anyway, the FDA was going after him very early. A lot of doctors and things were writing into Hygieia, which is now called JAMA back then, saying, "Oh, these are extraordinary products. They heal this and that." And the word quack would come up. "He's a quack. He's a quack,"
right?
You know? And the only reason he got to keep their company that's all family owned is because he had healed so many World War II people from the army coming back. They didn't call it PTSD back then, but the adrenals play a big role in PTSD. Adrenal fatigue is a big part of that. And they let him keep his company, but they never allowed him to tell how his products worked. So a lot of people don't know about these products, but anyway, I use them. They're amazing.
Okay.
So I forgot what we were talking about, actually.
What's wrong with modern medicine? Why do you think there's something wrong with
all the things that we used in medicine? They were very successful. So I was going through all these things, but there was another drug called the drug back then. It was called rutin, and rutin is a part of the vitamin C complex in nature. It's a bioflavonoid, and Harvard had done all these studies. It prevented heart attacks. If you took it when you had a heart attack, it was better. It prevented second heart attack, all this wonderful information, and that got taken. So what happened was, about in the 80s, 90s, the pharmaceutical companies started gobbling up all these companies of natural things. Hydroxychloroquine, one of those, you know, comes from a tree bark. And they took them off the shelf and replaced them with very expensive things. Yeah, Royal Lee is the person I was talking about. He was really a brilliant man. He was an engineer and a dentist, mm-hmm. and a brilliant, brilliant man.
I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I just wanted to say this is an observation. I don't know if you've seen this, but I've seen a lot of like engineers and dentists who have really blown the whistle on medical industry. It's very interesting to me that
dentists are the best naturopaths, because the thing is that when you look at the biochemistry pathways, you'll see so many minerals you need for the enzymes to work. And so when they don't have the enzymes, or a better example might be sugar uses chromium, glucose to get into the cell. So when you eat white sugar, then what happens, the body goes, where's my chromium? Oh, well, where's our minerals stored? Our teeth and in our bones. So a dentist is one of the first to see nutrient deficiencies in the body. And so they are very good at understanding the nutrition. Not today so much, because, it doesn't matter what you eat. That's the kind of attitude of most doctors and dentists today. But more and more, we're seeing holistic dentists, just like we're seeing more and more doctors wanting to be integrated.
I see one.
Yeah.
Yep. Yes.
So, so then also back then, prescription drugs were $3. I mean, that was the average price. Most were $2. There wasn't prescription insurance. There wasn't PBMs, pharmacy benefit managers, that make more than pharmaceutical companies today. There was none of that. And most doctors were, they took these basic courses, so they had an understanding of what the drugs did, what was their side effects, all of these things. And they knew, we also learned a lot about natural things in pharmacy school and medicine back then too. And all of that's been taken out of the curriculum, and also the physiology, the biochemistry. This year, they got rid of anatomy. So they're not looking at the body. Yeah. You know, why would a doctor need to know the difference between a ligament and a muscle? they've taken all that and they've replaced it with humanism, and they've replaced it with like this major course in both pharmacy and medical school. And what it is problem and reaction solution. So if you want to find out if somebody has, high blood pressure or diabetes, right? For diabetes, your A1C has to be above 6, your blood sugar has to be above 125. Then we can name it. We can bill for that in that code. And then you take these drugs first. And if that doesn't work, these drugs. And that's basically what the kids learn today. They don't learn anything else. Matter of fact, the medical students, I started another website for CE credits for doctors and pharmacists. And they, because the medical students came to me and said, Dr. Levy, I just spent like $1 million in 23 years of my life in school, and I don't know anything. I don't know anything. And a matter of fact, right before COVID, I don't know what it is now. I imagine it might be even higher. But right before COVID, we had a big discussion that doctors are committing suicide at the highest rate ever. And one of the other things they did in the hospital, so Obamacare, what happened, it all got taken over by corporations, the food management, PT, the doctor you get. It's all what your insurance has contracted with. And your regular doctor no more, he does not have privileges to put you in the hospital, and has no say, even though they might have known you for 20 years. They know every problem they can't treat you. Yes, the surgeons are killing themselves at an alarming rate. And they've gotten rid of all of the older doctors, you know, that did have this basic understanding. My brother was in the hospital for a very long time. And one of the things was he was in bradycardia, which means his heart rate was too low. And he had a very nice young cardiologist, and he went to all Ivy League. And I went to him and I said, you know, I think my brother might be magnesium deficient. Do you think you could pull a lab? And he said, that has nothing to do with it. And I'm like, you're an electrophysiologist cardiologist, and you didn't learn magnesium, calcium, potassium, and sodium going through those channels causes the electrical current. So the heartbeats, nobody's taught you that in the Ivy League. Oh yeah, they've taught it, but it has nothing to do with it. And he said, I won't do it. So my brother's heart rate went so low, they put him in the ICU. And sure enough, they took a magnesium level. And within 10 minutes, he was low. And within 10 minutes of getting mag sulfate, his heart rate and blood pressure were normal. So I realized if I didn't take a magnesium shake in, because I asked his internal medicine, oh no, only the cardiologist can touch magnesium in the hospital. And I said to I found the cardiologist. I'm like, well, now that we know he's magnesium deficient, which you should know, I didn't say this part, but he should have known, because my brother was on a proton pump inhibitor for 3 months in the hospital, which they put on. And that depletes your body of calcium and magnesium. And sure, he should have known that, but they don't learn anything of that. It's just shut the front door. This is what we want you to know and say, and forget the rest. And so anyway, he again denied. I said, look, I'm giving magnesium, and we know my brother's magnesium deficient. And every time I give the magnesium, his heart rate is normal. When I don't bring a magnesium shake, it goes down. He goes, no, you only give it when the QR wave is short. And I said, who? The H, I'm sorry. Is teaching you this? I never heard of this before. So I went to one of my friends who's older like me, a cardiologist, and I said, have you ever heard you only give, I said, do you use magnesium? He goes, all the time, especially arrhythmias for pregnant women, because they, you know, they're making a whole baby, so they're going to be calcium and magnesium deficient. And he said, I said, yeah, ever hear only when the QR wave is short? And he's like, what? I go, yeah, this is what they're teaching in the Ivy League. Then I come to find out. So my boss used to be, I was in the medical school. Now I transferred to the pharmacy school, but my boss used to be an old pathologist in the day. And now she's the head of the integrative medicine department. But she told me, she said, you know, back in the 70s, because she's like in her 70s, she said, Lynn, we used to carry mag sulfate in our pockets in a syringe, because she said, that's like a miracle for the heart. It's crazy. I said, first of all, only the cardiologist can even look at it in the hospital because it's dangerous. And they won't use it because they're being given wrong information. Crazy. The lab is telling you it's low and you won't give it. And then my brother was iron deficient. Well, his oxygen was very low. And they're like, oh, give him oxygen. We're going to have to call a code. We have to give him oxygen to get that with 72%. And thank God there was an old physician from Cuba. And Cuba used to have the best doctors. They were all from Harvard back in the 60s, you know. And he said, he looked with me. We went through the labs. And, you know, the other thing with the Obamacare was the electronic medical record. So what would used to take less than 5 seconds, because there was a tab on the chart that said lab, and you just went, boom, you know, looked at the lab. We had to go back. It took us 15 minutes to go back 30 days to see that his iron was like almost zero, and his platelets currently and everything was low, really low. And so he called the doctor. He's speaking to him in Spanish, saying that he's iron deficient anemia. And the doctor must have asked him, what do I give? because he said, well, you give 325 of iron with 500 of vitamin C, which I was so happy. He knew that vitamin C chelates the iron to take it across to put it in the blood. And so anyway, but the doctor didn't even know that. So it's a very, very sad state of affairs. And, you know, one of the medical students, I was telling him the story, and he works in the ER as a transcriptionist, you know, before he got in medical school. He said, you don't understand, Dr. Lafferty, the hospital tells who can use what. And if you don't do what they say, it's very likely you'll lose your privileges at that hospital. So I don't know who's really running things, who's teaching these
things. That's what I was going to ask.
It's got to change. It's horrible. And I get so many of patients. I have a clinic at Nova. I get so many patients who go, you know, I went to Harvard. I went to Mayo Clinic. They're wealthy. They've been all over. And, you know, you're the first one that knew what was going on here. And you know, I really resent a lot of the women get told they're crazy. Go to a psychiatrist.
Right.
It's because they don't know. First of all, they don't have the basic course. And then they don't have systematic thinking. So I remember, for instance, we saw the first case of pancreatic cancer at Medical College of Georgia, and the doctors were like, whoa, we've never seen this. And so they said to us, the medical students, pharmacy students, go to the medical library and go find a journal and see what's the latest and the greatest in pancreatic cancer. They didn't wait for Dr. Fauci to tell them what to do, or they didn't wait for NIH or a drug company. They said, let's go to the medical library where there's real research going on and let's figure it out. So that's what we learned, all the science and how to research things. They've taken away journal club from medical school. I was recently speaking to a group. I am the advisor for the Integrative Medical Club, and there's pharmacy students and medical students, about 100 in there was at my lecture. And I asked them, how many of you went to the medical library when you heard about coronavirus to see if you could find something in there that might save you or help you? And none of them raised their hand. And that's the first thing I did when I heard the word coronavirus early on in the very beginning of January of 2020. I went straight to the medical library. My grandmother had a 150-acre farm. And she was like the town doctor. She was a herbalist and she never took a drug or anything. But I remember her by her elderberry trees by her creek and telling me that there was this awful flu and all these people died back in 1920 and none of our family got it. And she had worked with 20 people and they all got better. And she didn't ever she never got it from them. And that she took the elderberry.
Wow.
So there's my grandma and grandpa right there on their farm in their 20s. And it's on my website. And everybody thought my grandmother was crazy. And everything she told everybody was 1,000% right.
I love that story. Where it said how she didn't have to say it was organic because back then they didn't use the chemicals and pesticides.
That's
great.
It's amazing. And so I went to coronavirus and elderberry and the medical library, and I found in 2015 or 16, coronavirus SARS had broken out in a nursing home in Louisiana. And they had used elderberry extracted in alcohol, which, by the way, is the best way to extract herbs is in alcohol. And that nobody died. Nobody went to the hospital. And in 5 days, it was gone. So I was able to call the company that makes a lot of our herbal remedies if we want some that are specialized. And I asked them to make that for me. And I now have a course, and in that course, I show people how to make it because you can make your own herbal formulas because that was very expensive because she has to have, you know, all sorts of licenses and insurances and things like that. And it gets delivered, but there's ways to make your own herbal formulas at home. And I'm really committed to that because there are a lot of things in your home or that you could have brought in, like dried elderberries, organic elderberries from one of the websites, and you could have made your own cure for it, you know.
Wow. What do you think is going on? Why do you think that these doctors are not learning like basic? I mean, the fact that they're not learning nutrition is pretty sad, but that's been going on for a really long time. But taking out biochemistry, I mean, that's like kind of the foundation. If you don't, and taking out anatomy, I mean, if you don't understand the body, how are you supposed to be a doctor? I don't understand. Yeah.
It was funny too. I have a foot surgeon I go to because I have very flat feet. He's the best in South Florida. He does all the sports teams here, like the Miami Dolphins and that. And I had invited Dr. Latipoet to our university, who is our surgeon general. You've probably heard about him. And I said, can you come and speak to him? Because we're having it in the evening. He goes, no, I'm still working at 7 o'clock. He said, but why did you invite me? What would you want me to tell him? That medical students don't learn anything. He goes, oh my God, they don't know anything. He said, it's awful. It's unbelievable.
Scary.
He said, they don't know the difference between a muscle and a ligament. It's crazy. Well, that's because, doctor, I'm sorry to tell you, they took anatomy out. Why would you need to know that after all?
Well, that's scary. Why do you think that is? Why are they doing that?
Well, why aren't they teaching, you know, transgenderism in school and that you're not a girl? Or, I mean,
right.
It's, to me, it's very, I don't know if you want to call them psychopaths, demons. I don't know what you want to call them, right. But I witnessed that very much in the medical school. And my friend who's been at a different university said the same thing about the administration. It's just, it's follow what we say. And obviously it's about profits with the pharmaceutical companies and power. Really, it's about power. It's not really about money gives power. So it's really about power.
But is it the pharmaceutical companies that are funding this? I mean, I'm familiar with the Rockefeller takeover in the early 1900s. And, you know, a lot of that was done through this Flexner Report in 1910, where they used that. They petitioned to Congress to be able to defund any schools that were not following an allopathic medicine method. So meaning that they were only schools that trained in pharmacology. You know, at that time it was about the petrochemical because he owned the monopoly. Only they would be funded. And the same thing with the boards, the licensing, you know, that none of the naturopathic or homeopathic or holistic practices would receive funding. So do you think it's something similar? But obviously it's not just through Rockefeller now. I would think that the pharmaceutical industry is probably fund like the textbooks and the schools to some extent, or I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, people still say to me like, oh, it's because those reps go into the, I actually was a drug rep actually for 2 years for a pharmaceutical company. That's great. I don't, it's not like that anymore. They've become even cheaper, right? At least the doctors used to get good vacations out of it. Now all they've done, they probably, I don't know how much they give to the, there's these big bodies and pharmacy educators, and that group is the one that determines what school because they give accreditation. And so that's how it goes. Now the osteopaths, they learn more anatomy. They have to, because they're doing manipulative medicine on top of knowing everything a regular doctor knows.
Yeah.
But they gave up their, it's called GMA, Graduate Medical Association Education. I can't remember exactly, but they've given up even their own specialized residencies and things that they've had to become one body. And so basically they're the ones who determine what the curriculum, because they write the board. So you have to study to pass the board to get your license. I do know a state that is looking to get out of that. I don't want to name it because I talked to some of those doctors, but there's a state where there's a president of a medical association that wants to get out of that system. And I think that would be fabulous.
Oh, well, I'm very curious, but I won't press you. I hope that they achieve it and that others can follow suit. You know, maybe it'll set a precedent.
They were a leader when it came time for COVID, I'll tell you that. So, yeah.
I'm sorry, say that again?
They were a leader in the COVID.
Oh, a leader. Okay. Oh, that. Okay, great. Well, I'll definitely keep a lookout for that. Maybe we can follow up on that. That's really interesting. Yeah, because we definitely need. So I know in my state that naturopathic medicine is actually illegal. I think there are two states in the country, and Tennessee is one of them. So that's just crazy to me. What are your thoughts on how people can, I think right now what we're seeing, we are seeing a kind of a resurgence of alternative, holistic, integrative practices. A lot of people are seeking out, and a lot of doctors, medical doctors or, pharmacologically trained doctors are kind of either integrating a more hybrid type style, or they're opting out of the traditional mainstream medical system. But I don't think that, I don't know, I'm curious your thoughts, because I think there's certainly a time and a place for, the more allopathic or acute medicine, and what's going to happen if we can't depend on it at all. So, right? How do you think the future of medicine is going to go? What's that going to look like?
Well, what I'm hoping is we spend, the NIH itself spends, I think it's $40 billion a year or more on the research. So they hold all the power and things. So I actually write a Substack under a known deplume, which I'm not going to give you right now because I don't want my university to know. But I talk about the NIH in there. And we have one researcher at the university, and that researcher has gotten, probably since I've known them, $250 million, and they have $250 million over 10 years. They
one have researcher? Not,
yeah, her group. Yeah.
Wow.
She has institute and her group. Well, she gets a lot more money than that, too. She gets money from the Department of Defense. She gets money from the CDC. She gets money from other groups, private groups, and things like that. But anyway, that researcher and group, they haven't done one thing. They hardly publish, and they haven't done one thing to change patient care that I've ever seen. You know, and before I wrote it, I asked some of the doctors over there because I wanted to be sure that what I thought was right. And then we have another researcher who could win a Nobel Prize for some of the work he's done. And he's very old, and his stuff is really groundbreaking when it comes to autism, when it comes to inflammation in the body with folic acid, and having what we call a SNP, where your folic acid and your B12 are not methylating. And so his things are so groundbreaking. It could save so many lives and so many medical issues. And the NIH should be spending that money to get this into the hands of the medical association, into the education of the new doctors, and they haven't spent one penny to do that. So you've got two scenarios. One is doing extraordinary work and that information is going nowhere. Right. And the other one's not doing much of anything to make the to change the way the patients are moving either. You know, she's doing, they're doing a couple of things at that institute with natural products because the patients can't take a lot of prescription drugs because they're that sick. But none of it has transferred into anything that I could tell you that to do on a global level with, with medicine. Yeah. So what I'm hoping in the future is we look at what a well care system and not a sickness system.
Yeah, that would be great.
So we get rid of these doctors who, the other thing is, it's a cabal over there. So I used to have a drug education program, and I had a very good friend in the Clinton administration who loved my program. And he had been the number two at NIDA, the National Institute of Drug Education, Drug Abuse. And he wanted me to get a grant really bad to prove my program worked. He saw it work, but he said, you know, you need to publish. And so he called over and said, will you help her? And they said, sure. So they said, you need somebody that's been getting money to help you. So they called one of the researchers, put me with them. And he was so angry because he said, why? It's how many, all these schools are buying your program. Like, I got $20 million from NIDA and nobody's using my program. And I said, well, you know, I sat down with 100 kids and they asked them, what do you think of this? Or do you need a puzzle or, you know, whatever. And what messages worked? And then I sat down with 25 teachers and put together the curriculum guide because they would tell me, it would be good if we had a puzzle here. It'd be good if we had a game here, whatever. So I guess I'm just giving the customer what they want. And he started yelling at me, you don't give the customer what they want. You come up from above and you should know what they need. And he just went on and on. So when I wrote the grant, I didn't get it, but they give you a review and tell you what needs to be changed or whatever. Yeah. And one of my good friends at Stanford Research Institute happened to be the head of the research there for those grants. The head of the, she was the person that directed the people that read the grant. She said, Lynn, I'm not going to be able to read your grant and make a comment because you and I are friends. So what I'll do is I'll help you rewrite it. We'll rewrite the grant the way they want, what they're telling us they want. Well, guess what? Right. I rewrote it and I still didn't get it. And what they did so that I wouldn't, there were 500 companies that were doing things with kids with drug education and nobody was buying these researchers who had gotten $40 million, $20 million, because you know what? They never went to a school. I used to work with gang kids in our city. They never went to a school. They never found out what relates to that population. Wow. So what they did, instead of trying to find what works, her program's getting bought by thousands of schools, thousands of students are using her things, and she's having some success in primary preliminary studies. Let's see what. No, instead, they want to kill me and find a way that they can get in and have no competition. So what they did was they had the Department of Education who gave, I was in California at the time, $600 million a year for drug education. They do it by your population in the state. So California got the most. And then what they did is they put out, they had these researchers from NIDA be the panel who decides what drug education programs get to be used with the Department of Education money.
Wow.
So 500 of us didn't make it onto their list. You had only a 6% chance of making it on the list if you hadn't received money from NIDA. So that it made them look good, like, oh, look at all these schools now buy our programs and love our stuff. And it's all a cabal. It's all corrupted. And we can see by all the people that are now dying from fentanyl and how drug abuse has only gone up, that those programs did not work.
Right.
I, on the other hand, get messages over Facebook, LinkedIn from the kids I worked with in Oakland in the inner city who've done amazing things with their life from being in the program that I put together there and the research I did do on that program. So it's just, that's the problem. It's everybody wants the money and they try to find ways that there is. The problem is the people like you, and I used to be an entrepreneur for a long time and have my own business. We think people think like us. Like we're willing to spend our money on the best stuff and help companies. We don't care if it's a small company or not. You know, we want to help these people. We have to remember they think exactly the opposite from us. They will lie, cheat, whatever to get the money and to get themselves in. So that's the problem.
That's a huge, huge problem. I don't know how we fix that. That's kind of a human nature problem. I am very concerned about the future of medicine because, as I said, I'm really encouraged that there are a lot of parallel systems. I'm seeing a lot of alternative, holistic, integrative type practices, functional medicine. You know, people have their gripes with each of them, but I'm glad to see that there are more options and there's more awareness of, you know, other methods. But I then this is just my personal opinion, but I don't want to see, you know, all of the traditional modern Western medicine just become completely invalid, which if it keeps going in this direction that you're talking about with the education and with the brainwashing, indoctrination, and of course, just the incentivization of doctors to, you know, because there's lots of this seems like there's lots of premiums for them to prescribe certain things, for them to push certain things. And so that can, of course, cloud perspective as well. And I'm very concerned about that because I think that there is a need to have, you know, modern Western medicine as well. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, ideally we'd be, you know, we're at a time, sorry, just to finish this, ideally we're at a time where like you would have the best of both worlds, right? You would have the advanced technology, you would have this advancement of modern medicine, and you have all the wisdom of ancient medicine and holistic practices and, you know, just the beauty of, you know, God-given nature. And you would think you would have the best of all of it, but unfortunately some of this corruption is making that much harder to be achieved. So,
yeah, I mean, this everywhere you look, it seems to be a real spiritual battle that we are in, and we're waking up. Coronavirus did so much and is doing so much. I mean, you know, with every lemon, there's a lemonade to be had, and the lemonade is so many people. I mean, I've known this for years. I read the Rockefeller Medicine Men probably 20 years ago or whatever.
Mullins.
Yeah, you know this stuff, but nobody else does, you know? So it's wonderful people like you and others and these companies, these small companies that are taking the risk. And I try to do everything I can to support people because I do have a wonderful job. I was brought in as an endowed professor by a very old pharmacist who he's now like 89. He's now emeritus, but he brought me in as an endowed professor 12 years ago to teach people about some of these older things. And he was also a very powerful politician. So his guidance and wisdom has really helped me a lot because I was asking him, you know, look at all these old drugs that we used to have. What happened? And he said to me, he said, well, Wall Street happened because he said back in like 1992, Wall Street decided we're going to make medicine our next big cash cow. And that was what happened, you know. And so, you know, it's wonderful to have an older person like that you can ask about history and learn from. I've been very blessed in that way. And my job is a big blessing.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. Yeah, that is great. Yeah, The Rockefeller Medicine Man. That's a great book. And Eustace Mullis has done some great work in the field as well. Murder by Injection.
I'll have to get that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's written a couple, but that one is really great. There were a couple of others that on the topic as well, but he's done some good research there. So, what do you recommend people do? How can people empower themselves?
That's why I did the course. It's not like I don't have anything else to do, but I'm so committed to, you know, my grandmother, my family lived very long. And my father, actually, it's funny, he had under one of his ribs, his skin, what, like a big hole thing there. I can't explain. It wasn't, you couldn't see through it. It had grown skin in. But my grandmother, when he was 5 or something, he got pneumonia and he couldn't breathe. So she took a butcher knife and, you know, opened his lungs there. So, you know, I'm not going to teach surgery by a butcher knife to anybody. But, you know, if there's a virus, you know, I've been looking because they keep saying, oh, there's going to be some new thing coming out or whatever. I've been researching viruses like crazy. And you know what? One of the things I found, the cardioglycosides are highly, highly, highly antiviral. And so they're one being digitalis. And digitalis used to be for 100 tablets, $2. It probably still is. We probably sell it for $6 maybe at our pharmacy. I should ask about that. And I even said to my boss today, they put in this geriatric, it's called the Beers list of dangerous drugs for old people. And most of them are things that'll make you fall, like opiate or benzos or something like that, you know, that they put on this list. But they put on the list digitalis. And I said to my boss today, we were talking about it. I've talked to him about this before. He's a pharmacist too, and a little older than me. And I said to him, I said, I've asked every cardiologist, every doctor, every medical student, every pharmacy student, every pharmacist I know, why are they not using digitalis for cardiac myopathy and when your heart won't pump out? Because it helps build the muscle up so it'll pump more blood out, right? It's called congestive heart failure. Right. They took that away, but they added a beta blocker. Now, a beta blocker slows your heart down. Why in the world would you ever do that? Right. So I don't know. They do things, yeah. And so they do weird little things like that. And doctors don't catch it. I have, my course is called Become Your Own Health Investigator, Health Advocate. And to know how to look at literature and how to investigate for yourself all these things, and to teach you the basic biochemistry and biology and things in simple for you to understand it. So, and also in the course, you get a book of all the vitamins, how they work, and all the food, not all the foods, but foods that are high in those vitamins. You get refrigerator lists. So the refrigerator list, if you want more vitamin D, I have a list on all the foods that cause, that are high in vitamin D. I also have, you get a book on how to make your own herbal preparations. My students and I, we worked very hard. We made a diet pill up because everybody's talking about berberine being the new Ozempic. And we put that in green tea. And there's research on both of those for weight loss. So we said, well, let's try that. We'll use the dose. You can do it yourself at home.
Berberine is a very similar to metformin.
Well, that's what they say.
Yeah. Well, metformin comes from a French lily-like plant. And but they say that the pathway is the... in terms of insulin sensitivity is very similar to what berberine does, but I think they're slightly different. I don't remember how they operate differently, but they do operate on slightly different pathways.
And I have the head of integrative medicine at our university and an osteopath and myself in this free video. It's an hour long video talking about what we all do and how plants are superior in treating infectious diseases and recent findings on inflammation, because most people today have major inflammation as their medical issue. Sure. So right now I'm doing the course. If you put moms 25, it's $125, but you get $25 off. And then half of the proceeds are also given away. One group is Moms for America, which they're trying to work very hard to change school boards across the country and look at our curriculum and things like that. It's going to start March 2nd. And you'll learn all sorts of videos and other things in that. But food is medicine and epigenetics you learn about, and just all sorts of different things that you can see. Probiotics, fiber, stomach acid, and all different symptoms you might have. And then in between, I'm going to have a couple of podcasts, and you can bring your medical problems to me, and we'll work on those together. Yeah. The story of your poop. They call me the poop doctor. What does it look like? Is it float or sink? It all tells a story, and it's really important. And different kinds of diets. Everybody wants to run to one diet or another, and certain diets are great for certain conditions, and certain diets are great for certain conditions. So we talk about that and liver detox. And the best thing you can do right there, blood sugar regulation, to get yourself in steady state of blood sugar. There's the picture. And what else do we talk about? Your adrenals are shot, and that has to do with your why you can't sleep and why you have no energy. And matter of fact, there's studies coming out. If your cortisol is low in the morning, you're much more likely to be depressed. And also, they're saying for major depression, we have to look at the endocrine system. The adrenals, back in the times of Hippocrates, they knew this was the center of the universe in medicine. And today, they don't even talk about the adrenals because there's nothing you can do about them because they don't have a treatment. I asked one of my patients, I think he might have Epstein-Barr virus. I said, would you get your doctor to do a lab? So she went to the doctor. And they did Epstein-Barr, and the doctor said, well, I'll do it, but why do you care? We don't have anything to treat it. Well, you know what? Plants kill viruses. They kill them out in nature. So that translates to, guess what? Them killing them in us. You know? So, and get your vitamin D up, get your zinc up. All of that is important to in the... And then so much of medicine, the things aren't true. So one of the things is they'll say, if you went to Harvard and talked about rheumatoid arthritis, we have no idea what causes it. But when you go to the medical library, if you go to PubMed, there's 305 studies telling you it's from gut bacteria leaking out. And if you go to Science Direct from Europe, there's 8,000 studies telling you that. And it'll tell you that about multiple sclerosis. It'll tell you that about type 1 diabetes. It'll tell you that about SLE, lupus. It'll tell you that about Crohn's. It'll tell you that about thyroiditis. It'll tell you that about all the quote-unquote autoimmune that nobody knows how it's caused. Well, really? I guess you don't go to the medical library. Fauci, I guess he didn't go to the medical library, did he? And look up that nobody died from coronavirus using elderberry. So this is the problem of what's going on. In the meantime, they're spending the billions of dollars of our tax money to make sure that we don't get better. And we got to do something about it as patriots.
Yeah, for sure. Wow, that's astounding. So all of these autoimmune, it's not surprising that they're tied to gut health, but it is surprising that they're claiming that they don't know that it's just this big mystery when there's so much, such a large body of evidence.
In my slides, let's see. It's, let me see what, I think it's slide 33.
Okay.
32, I talk about a case that I had of a 17-year-old female. And it's one of the other reason why I got my job was because she came to the university I work at. So she was 17. She got diagnosed with RA at age 2. Now, I have to tell my students, you know, when I was your age, I never saw anybody under 50 with rheumatoid arthritis because mostly it's women with these quote autoimmune diseases. It's women who have gone through menopause and that they don't teach. Doctors don't know that the endocrine system, your adrenal gland, especially plays a huge role in your immune system. As a matter of fact, the new thinking, and this is in the Neuroimmune Institute, where they're doing some interesting work there at our university, there's really not a nerve system, there's not an immune system, there's not an endocrine system. There's a system of endocannabinoids, hormones, neurotransmitters, and proteins from your immune system that are constantly up and down regulating each other and talking to each other. Yes. And so when those get out of balance, then mm-hmm. your immune system goes down, you're more likely to get one of these things. If right. you could put up the next slide in the after the one that we just saw. And if you see here, they say it's a chronic disease. And it causes pain, stiffness, warmth, redness over time. Joints may become misshapen, misaligned, damaged, and go down to the next slide if you can. And then they go, the cause of rheumatoid arthritis is unknown. It appears to be an autoimmune. And that's when the body's immune system doesn't operate as it should. Well, do you really think one day your body woke up and said, I don't like my joints. What's causing this slide?
Yeah, probably not.
We can go to the next slide to just show you. And then they want you to use these wonderful drugs. And the next slide, the things like methotrexate. And then you see these black box warnings where they're causing cancer with methotrexate. Third paragraph, deaths have been reported by the use because of malignancy, psoriasis, and rheumatoid arthritis, and they have to be monitored, their bone marrow, liver, lung, kidney. And then over here to the right, it talks about serious infections that people get from these drugs. If we go to the next slide,
mm-hmm.
they're called black box warnings. But then here was, I accessed this about 3 weeks ago, when I put in the National Library, which is our PubMed, rheumatoid arthritis and gut bacteria, you see right down there, it's 376 results. And it says in here, gut bacteria from pathogenesis to novel therapeutic opportunities. That was done in China. And they're talking about there's a relationship in all of this, ankylosing spondylosis, Crohn's, rheumatoid arthritis and gut bacteria, antibodies, etiopathogenesis of rheumatoid. That means the cause of rheumatoid arthritis is from gut bacteria. Right. Next slide. And then here you see 8,300 studies. This is Science Direct, which is out of Holland, Amsterdam in Europe, and 8,300 studies that have about rheumatoid arthritis being caused by gut bacteria. And the next slide.
Yeah.
And then we just see there how the Prevotella and all of these things leak out of our gut and go to our joints. And then the immune system, the first reaction of your immune system is going to be inflammation. Then the next slide. And we see it for multiple sclerosis, 425 results when you put gut bacteria. And actually, UC Davis has found a lot of research finding the bacteria that causes multiple sclerosis and the toxin that it puts out goes to the brain and causes the lesions.
Wow. And when was this?
This has been going on for the last 10, 15 years. We've seen Crohn's and gut bacteria, 1,700 studies, gut microbiota, inflammatory bowel disease, colorectal cancer. We know that's caused from certain types of bacteria and also by one of your bile salts. It doesn't get detoxified properly in the gut. Next slide. So again, here are case studies. This shouldn't say case studies. Actually, somebody did these for me. I should say research or just studies. This is from 1969, studies on the intestinal flora, the bacterial studies in healthy and achlorhydric, which means people that don't have stomach acid, and then also Clostridium, the fourth one down in allied conditions, 1976, 1978, possible role of alterations in intestinal flora in rheumatoid arthritis, 78 again, the infectious etiology of rheumatoid arthritis, going to 87, intestinal bacteria and rheumatic disease, antibodies to Proteus, which is a bacteria in rheumatoid arthritis in the Lancet, 1985. Gastrointestinal involvement in rheumatoid arthritis, 1979, and on it goes. So, yeah.
Wow.
And these are all the things you learn in the course. And then the wonderful thing is it's the natural antibiotics that kill these things and do not kill your good bacteria. It was funny. I was at I used to be on the board of the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, and I was presenting there for their conference and saying that I used oregano oil, and it has the same kill rate as bleach, you know, but yet you can take it. And I always wondered, because it is so powerful, wondering, is it killing the good bacteria? And this lady, another naturopathic doctor, actually started yelling at me and saying, I would never use that because it's, you're killing off the good bacteria. And I said, well, do you have a study that shows that? Because I've been looking for that because I want to know that myself. And she said, well, no, I don't know of a study. Well, guess what? Not only does it not kill your good bacteria, but it actually tightens those junctions so stuff doesn't leak out of it. And it helps a lot of things like garlic, a natural antibiotic, actually feed the good bacteria. It's a probiotic, a prebiotic. I mean, so it'll feed the good bacteria. So, so we just use all the natural things and we have very good success with autoimmune conditions because you have to get out of the box and create your own reality. And my reality is actual medical research. I tell my students, we don't go by, what people tell us. We want to go see the evidence itself, real evidence. So,
sure. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I get so excited about all this.
No, it's great. So we need this. So with the, I know people are familiar with probiotics and prebiotics. You said prebiotics feed the bacteria. So what do the probiotics do?
Probiotics are the bacteria.
They are the good bacteria. Okay, so
are the bacteria themselves, and then prebiotics are foods they eat so that they keep multiplying and flourish in your gut.
Okay, interesting. Yeah,
and the two guys together are called the symbiotic.
Right, that's fascinating about MS. So, what would that mean for treating MS? I mean, because they have all sorts of varying.
I can just say that I've seen it work. And I told one of the ladies, because she came in on a cane. She'd had MS for 13 years and she'd been on a cane for 11 years. And I said, you don't need the cane anymore. And I had a medical doctor working with me too, because I wanted to try I needed a prescription for some estriol, which is one type of estrogen, which is the most benevolent estrogen. And they had talked about having some success with it. So I wanted to see how that worked. And anyway, she said, well, I don't know. I know I'm getting better, but I'm afraid, what if I'm really not? Because she's been programmed, you are not going to get better.
Right, right.
You're trying to keep this at bay so it doesn't get worse with these horrible drugs.
Right.
And so I said to her, I said, you know what? You do better 3 weeks out of the month and then you take that one drug and you're down for a week. I think you should talk to your doctor about stopping. And fortunately, the doctor was a vegan. He liked that she was making changes in her diet and said, yeah, you've been on it too long. Let's go off from it for a while. So he was a little bit different thinker. And I said, I can tell you why you're getting better, because your left leg had all sorts of scabs on it. She goes, that's a leg with MS. I said, yeah, because these parasites and things are coming out of your leg trying to escape. And I said, but look at your leg now, because she always wore shorts to the thing. She always wore long shorts. And I said, they're all gone, but one thing. And then one of my students said, who was from Pakistan, said, you know, my mother used to put turmeric on that, make a turmeric paste. I go, that's a great idea. Got rid of the rest of it. But yeah, you just, that's what we do.
Wow. So you had mentioned parasites. What do you think the connection with parasites are? You know, so we're in the most of Western medicine, they kind of dismiss parasites as like, unless you go to a third world country, you don't really need to worry about it. And yeah, but it seems like now there's a lot of people talking about connection between parasites and cancer. And it sounds like there's parasite connections to a lot of things that you just mentioned.
Anything that is a foreign body that doesn't belong in your body is going to stimulate your immune system, and it may or may not chew away at something or change DNA. I mean, we know, for instance, Epstein-Barr, again, it causes so many things, but we know for sure, I mean, this has been in the literature since I was in school 40 years ago, because we had a patient with Burkitt's lymphoma. It definitely causes Burkitt's lymphoma. It was interesting because I kept thinking, they kept talking about Marburg virus, you know, and I'm like, gosh, I got to find some natural thing that'll kill the Marburg virus, because that is one of the hemorrhagic viruses like Ebola. So I didn't have a chance to go to the medical library, but I went and spoke at a conference, and this man had taken oleandrin out of oleander, which is the cardiac glycoside. And oleander, you don't want to try this at home. These are big poisons. So you need, he said, it's almost a homeopathic dose of oleander. And anyway, he had that it killed the Ebola and the Marburg. And he was at good universities, by the way, like I think University of Minnesota or Pittsburgh. He was at real good universities doing studies on this. And I saw he said something about glioblastoma, which is, you know, a very bad cancer you get in the brain. And one of my good friends, who's a very smart doctor out in Oakland, he said one time to me, he said, you know, glioblastoma has to be infectious. He said, the only people I've ever seen get it, I know two neurosurgeons that died from it. And now one of my best friends, who is the top researcher at one of the universities there, she just died from it. And wow, she was studying the glioblastoma. So I saw that he was using the oleander on a glioblastoma study from Italy at Milan. And so I said that to him, that my friend thought it was infectious. He said, absolutely, it's infectious and it's caused by a virus. And we're having very good results with oleandrin with that. The FDA, he was having great success with this product in, the FDA made them change it to, and even though it's a homeopathic, to a much different formula. So he said, I have no idea now if it works or not. So, but anyway, I have some homeopathic oleander in my arsenal here in case anything happens.
So,
right, right. But that's a so. Is there? Do you think there's a connection with viruses and parasites, or?
Well, I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that there's a connection with viruses and cancer, because we know this. I mean, there's if I right now could probably pull up 1,000 studies if I put Epstein-Barr virus in Burkitt's lymphoma. There's not a question of whether that is doing it. So anything that's going to constantly be causing, when you stimulate the immune system, you're getting oxidative stress. We right. know reactive oxidative species called ROS changes your DNA code, the expression. May not because remember the code goes to messenger RNA and that cell is going to be dead. And then there's going to be two new cells. We also know with epigenetics, you can change that code back. And that's one of the things I've seen with those proteomorphogens where people's tissues get healed, kidney disease, all sorts of things with that. They can't talk. They're under a decree, so they can never talk about how those things work. But I've seen real miracles with the heart, kidneys, with those things. Wow. So anyway, so anything that's going to stimulate your immune system over and over and over, where you've got constant inflammation and stress, has a possibility to cause cancer.
Right. Sure. Yeah. So that I could see how that would be applicable with parasites as well. Yeah.
I can't point to a study with, oh, yeah, we found this parasite causes cancer. Right. I can do that. I wish you would have asked me, told me you were going to do that because I have a team of people. So if you become a patient like a mine, I have a whole group of students and we do nothing but we're combing that medical library all the time. But again, if you take my course, I'm going to teach you how to do that and what to look for and how to, you know, have to, some of the words might be too big or whatever you might think, but usually the abstracts are very simple to read. And if you don't understand a word, you can always go to the medical, to a dictionary and look it up. So, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Wow. So, do you feel like this is just like so you can become you call it your own medical investigator, so you can kind of look at the symptoms and then go to this medical library and figure out like what symptoms might be correlating to you and then how to
You get a symptom survey and you're going to learn about the different like we look at sympathetic nervous system, parasympathetic, sugar handling, cardiovascular, liver, GI, and then the different sections of the endocrine system. And then you also look at the nervous system. So we go over all those symptoms. So you get that in the course and how to use it and all that too.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so then you look through the symptoms and then you can correlated to different so what do they do from there? So is it like a, I don't know, because the traditional model is kind of like you take a collection of symptoms and you have a diagnosis and there's a, you know, the pill
diagnoses are over because the people are always going, well, you're a pharmacist, you can't make a diagnosis. I go, as a naturopath, I don't care about a diagnosis.
Good. Okay. Yeah.
It makes no difference to me. Like I'll tell people too, like they'll go, should I go get a biopsy of cancer? I always go, well, if you get the biopsy, are you going to get surgery? Like you're going to get your prostate removed? Are you going to get it zapped? Are you going to get radiation? Are you get, you know, are you get chemo? Or, you know, what are you going to do? No, you sure you don't want it though? Okay, then what's the point?
Right, exactly. I agree.
If you're peeing a lot and you've got a high PSA, you know, it's not functioning right. Whether they want to call. Well, let me tell you something. This is going to really blow your mind. You ready? Okay. Not as if I haven't blown your mind enough, right?
I'm ready.
So awesome. My best friend from pharmacy school actually married a pathologist. And okay. He owned a pathology lab and stuff. And he used to work at the work from his own company. Right.
Okay.
So one day we're sitting at the dining room table and having dinner. And he says, you know, half of the time, I guess whether you have cancer or not. Like, you guess. What do you mean by that? Yeah. And he said, well, it's not like, you know, everybody has cells that don't look normal and they may or may not be cancer. So it's not that easy when you're looking at them to say that, you know, it's not like cancer's got a neon color and everything else over here is red, you know. So he said, it's not that easy. So I was
putting it like a big C on the cell.
Right. So I was putting a conference on and I invited the chief of the director at University of Missouri of the NIH Cancer Center. And he was a pathologist and he also was a PhD immunologist. So after he gave his talk in front of like 600 people, I said, oh, we have a question from the audience. And he said, he's like, yes, what's the question? I said, well, as a pathologist, how easy is it for you to, when you look at the cell, to say whether it's cancer or not? He goes, well, that's a really unusual question. I've never had anything like that. But as a pathologist, I have to say, I probably guess about half the time.
Wow. That's astounding. I mean, when you think of it, that's really, well, and even because there's all this, I hesitate to use the word, but it feels like it's propaganda, but, you know, to get early testing, you know, all these, like, sometimes pretty invasive treatments to go and diagnose whether or not it's cancer. And it'll save lives when we know. I mean, they've proven there's a direct correlation between radiation and cancer. And yet most of these diagnostics are a dose of radiation. I'm not saying that, you know, we can't, like, filter through or that, like, you can never be bombarded with radiation. I mean, we are able to detox, but it's just kind of ironic that that's they're constantly pushing you to get all of these tests. And sometimes they're way more invasive than that. You know, sometimes they're actually, invasive surgical kind of procedures. And to think that they're just guessing when it could actually be doing harm in the process of their diagnostic tools that could cause harm. And then they're just guessing anyway. That's crazy.
The medical students sat me down once and he said, Dr. Lafferty, why do they put a hole? He was from India. And he said, why do they put a hole here and do a biopsy for cancer? He said, in India, we don't do it because we're worried that the cells might spray out into the system and metastasize. I said, exactly. I said, as a naturopath, I don't really believe in that either. You know?
No, for sure.
Because I tell people, I'm going to treat this like it's cancer, whether it's cancer or not. And you're not, you may have a little bit of, could have a Herxheimer. I don't give harsh doses myself. I don't like people having Herxheimer. So I'm going to treat it with herbs that I know and animal tissues that will help raise your immune system and might kill, make an environment so the cancer can't grow. Cause like I said, is the DNA going to give you a better code next time when it makes new cells?
Right.
Or is it going to give the cancer code? You know, that's what way we have to be thinking.
Sure. Yeah. And, I think that, you know, not just for cancer, that kind of applies for most things. I feel like people are so focused on, that's why I asked about the diagnosis, but I feel like, and I could be wrong. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but it's my estimation that they are really trained to give diagnoses because once you give a diagnosis, then, you know, they can give you a quote unquote solution. Right. So then they've got like a correlate. So it's like, okay, well, you've got this diagnosis. I can give you this pill. And that's kind of, And I don't want to say that it's, you know, nefarious, because not all doctors, I think a lot of doctors, that's just how they're trained. You know, they're not, they think they're helping. I think they're
most of them want to help you.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think they too. Can see the high rate of suicide. They don't. Right. They're like, I spent my money for this. There's a doctor who wrote a book called Are Your Hormones Killing You? Dr. Elred Taylor. And we brought in, we had a conference of like 600 doctors. And a lot of them were not into the natural stuff or anything, you know. And he said, okay, I went to Emory. I spent all this money, went through all this training. Yeah. And basically, what do we do for all these diseases for women? So he had up there like dysmenorrhea, amenorrhea. So, you know, painful period, the period's not working, too much of your period, you know, all these different migraine headaches or whatever, all these different conditions. Yeah. And he said, I'll never forget my first night as a resident. And he said, I came in. And I had a patient with irregular bleeding. So I came in and told the chief resident, I have a woman with irregular bleeding. And he told the group, he said, you might not believe in bioidentical hormones or herbal medicine or anything, but I'm going to still, even if you keep practicing the way you're a gynecologist and want to keep practicing the way you're practicing, you're going to learn how to make more money. So, and you have more free time to think. So this is a good lesson. So he said, so the guy said, well, the chief resident said to him, well, how old is she? She's 22. Oh, give her birth control pills. Okay. So I wrote the prescription for birth control pills. So then the next time he comes in, he says, I've got a 45-year-old with irregular bleeding, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, oh, does she have a uterus? Yeah, she's got a uterus. Okay. Give Prempro. Now, then he goes and he writes that prescription. So then he goes and he says, well, I've got a 50-year-old. It's the same basic thing. And she doesn't have a uterus. We'll give Premarin. He goes, okay, why am I giving one the progestin and the estrogen and then the other one just the estrogen? He goes, well, if you don't have a uterus, you really don't need progesterone. Well, progesterone is the major hormone that makes your estrogen and testosterone and stuff. And he said, but you know, he said like a good kid, he goes, yeah, okay, fine. So he said, after 7 years, I thought I was going to commit suicide of doing this because he said, I'm going to show you how you can save money and time and all sorts of stuff. He said, all you really need is put in your medicine cabinet, the birth control pills here, the Premarin here and the Prempro over here. And then just have a headset to your front desk, room A. How old is she? And does she have a uterus? Okay, Premarin. How about room B? Okay, birth control pills. You know, room C, this. And he said, but before you leave, don't forget to take a handful of antidepressants because if that treatment doesn't work, it's not your fault. Something's wrong with the women. So just give them the antidepressant. So he said, now this will give you time. You know, they talk about a 30, you know, a 5-minute visit. Who needs 5 minutes? You really just need like 10 seconds because you don't have anything else in your arsenal to give them. You already know the treatment. So, you know, just say, hey, how are you? Here's your prescription. You need to be on this. You've got more time to, you know, make dinner reservations, look at your stocks, or you can see even more patients. So he said, honestly, after that, I thought I was going to kill myself. And that's why I love doing natural medicine now and doing bioidentical hormones, because I get to actually think about what's going on with someone. He goes, right. I don't have anything else to offer them. Not one other thing.
That's crazy. And I know it's true. I went through my own journey where literally like several doctors would not see me unless I took the pill because they told me they had no other option. Like take the birth control pill. Yeah.
They're not lying to you. They're not withholding something. They're not trying to be mean. Most of those young people that go to medical school, they're there and excited. I'm going to help somebody's life.
Right, of not, course.
Maybe not all of them. There's a few that are not the right reasons, or they want to be researchers or something. But most of them are there because they really and truly are good people and want to help the person. And they're as frustrated as you are. And how can, you know, how can you stand it if you're giving, because, well, my best friend who was an internal medicine at another university said, Lynn, it's that way with everything. That's why I always send you my GI patients. I can order Nexium in a barium swallow in a scan or colonoscopy. What do I need the GI department? And that's all they do. We've got Tagamet. Well, Tagamet. We've got, you know, Omeprazole, which Nexium or Prilosec, and surgery. And that's what he said to the gynecologist. And hey, if those two things don't work, that uterus is never going to work. So just take it out.
And yeah, that seems to be a major trend too. And that's just terrible.
Like, and women don't realize you get the uterus taken out, your bladder falls. And then you need a net for your bladder. And then the nuts grow into your skin and you're in pain. And, you know, it just goes on and on and on.
Yeah. And this whole trend of removing organs is just, I mean, they're there for a reason. Like, you really think you're going to remove something and somehow you're not going to have any consequences or any negative impact? It's just crazy to me. But that seems to be.
Health investigator course, we're going to teach you how to save your gallbladder. And it's very, very important. Doctors think it's nothing. It's so important to your health. It's so important to your hormones, your brain function, your nervous system.
You can't metabolize fats without a gallbladder. And how do you make hormones if you can't metabolize fats? Right. Yeah. No, it's crazy to me but that's what they do. They just say, oh, it's not working. We'll just remove it. Yeah. And then they wonder why there's all sorts of problems afterwards. Yeah.
And it got you in a situation by then that it's so hard. So that's one of the things that we recognize are in my visit. My visit's like an hour and a half. And I can tell you in the story of your poop will tell you if your gallbladder is functioning or not. So you'll learn that in the course. That's when, you know, all of these things you're going to learn that your doctor hasn't got any clue about. Don't get mad at him. Empower yourself and just know he's doing, or she, they're doing the very best they know how to do. They're not there trying to punish you. They might get frustrated with you because you bring stuff. Oh, I found this on the internet, that patients will get very frustrated. I found this on the internet. What do you think? They don't know what to think. They don't know anything.
I know it's a very broken system. And I think some of them want to, and again, no fault of their own. They just don't know what to do, but a lot of them want to bury their heads, but they don't realize that now with the internet and social media, patients do have access to so much more information. And so they can't just pretend that that's not there and that this one pill that they want to offer is the answer. So, Well, that's great. Okay. So they can take the course. They learn, you know, how to use, they learn how to look up their symptoms and they learn how to use the medical libraries.
And you can use the medical library, just go into Google and put scholarly. If you want to know, put rheumatoid arthritis and gut bacteria, scholarly, you'll get the information from what is in our medical library. So that's there. It's hidden. You know, you need to know how to do certain things, how to look for different things. And we'll go through all that.
Awesome. What does scholarly do to change it?
It's Google scholarly. It goes what you're looking for. It goes by, it'll hit PubMed. It'll go to
the medical journals.
Not just the journal.
Right.
Because some of these people also natural that they don't know what they're doing either. They're just as bad. I'll give you a case really interesting real quick and everything. But you can put in there rheumatoid arthritis and, or if you want less, lupus and gut bacteria or something.
Okay. Yeah.
So I had a woman call me because I lecture a lot to the holistic nurses. And she said, I'm doing everything. I've got a candida overgrowth. I'm taking oregano oil. I'm taking grapefruit seed extract. I eat properly. And she was. Now, people will tell you they eat properly. I always ask, what do you have for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks? I want to know exactly what you ate. Because inevitably, I'll say, I eat great. And then I say, well, what do you have for breakfast? And they're like, oh, here, and parasite diversity. Interesting. But anyway, lupus is L-U-P-U-S, just so you know. But anyhow, she called me and she said, for 5 years, I cannot get rid of this yeast. And she was eating perfectly. I said, do you have maybe using one of those alkaline water machines or drinking alkaline water? She's like, yeah. I go, how long ago did you buy that? 5 years ago. And I said, well, yeast love a basic environment. So it's growing because you've made your GI tract way too basic. It has to be a pH of 2 in the stomach and a pH of 5.5 to 6 in your GI tract. And that's why you've gotten it. And one of my friends who is very famous in this kind of the patriot and alternative movement, and he's very well known. And he got very upset. He's like, no, it doesn't do that. I go, okay, I'm just go by research. Here's a big university in England saying, can we use the alkaline water as an antacid? And yes, we can, because they tested it and the stomach acid goes alkaline. So.
Yeah. No, absolutely. That whole trend that is definitely can be problematic for people. I was going to ask about the medical journals just because, sometimes they're not so trustworthy. So how do you sift through that?
Yeah, well, they won't have anything that I'm looking for anyway. So I don't, that one thing from The Lancet was from 1985 when it actually published good things. But Duke University looked at nutrition and they found that 95% of the time there was nothing in any the top 200 medical journals on nutrition. And then the 5% of the time they did report, it was mostly negative. And the same thing, a lot of the herbal studies will be set up to be negative on purpose. Mm-hmm. They'll use the wrong part of the plant, or it'll be for mild to moderate depression, but they'll do it on severe depression, knowing that it won't work. They did that with one of the researcher. I know him. He speaks at conferences. He's a PhD, was at the National Institute of Mental Health, and now he's with the FDA. But he speaks out in these conferences I go to, and he said he was doing a study. He wanted to repeat because the number one drug. So Germany, they did big studies on these herbal remedies. And they found that, St. John wort works on depression. So it's the number one drug over there. But what they did after they did all that research, they made them prescription only. So they did this.
Now we have Prozac.
Huh?
Now we have Prozac.
Right. So he wanted to replicate the same study they did in Germany. So he got approval to do that. And then he decided, you know what? I think I'll put out antidepressant sertraline, which is known as Zoloft by Pfizer. And he called Pfizer and said, will you give me, I want to do a third arm in this study. Will you give me that for the study? No, I won't. And he goes, okay. So he hung up. And then the man called back the next day and said to him, oh, We'll give you the Zoloft. Will you give me the St. John's Wort? So he knew, oh, they're going to do their own study to negate what I'm doing. And he said, well, actually, I mean, he couldn't give it to him because it was given to him by the people that did the study in Germany because he was trying to replicate it over here. And so they said, okay, that's okay. So then a week later, whatever, his boss comes, the director of NIMH, and said, listen, we're changing your study to severe depression. He's like, what are you talking about? These people have been depressed for 2 years. 6 months of St. John's Wort isn't going to show anything. Nope, we're doing that. So it went across the whole country and the major newspapers. And it said, St. John's Wort doesn't work for depression. Well, guess what? Neither did the Zoloft work for severe depression. Mm-hmm. And they didn't report that in any newspaper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very interesting. They proved that all these SSRIs did nothing for anxiety and depression. A lot of those studies were done back in the 90s. And then suddenly, like a few years, and there was another wave of studies in around 2008. And it came with the same results. And then suddenly, this like a year ago, there was a whole media blitz about it. And I was like, why now? I personally think it was because they wanted to promote, the psychedelics as a treatment. And there seems to be a major push for that. And, people are like, oh, but they're wonderful and they're natural. But if you look into it, there's a whole big pharma angle where they're making synthetic mushroom products. You know, Peter Thiel's got a whole company where he's working on it. He's certainly not the only one, but I think that's what that was all about. I don't know. I can't prove that, but it just seems interesting timing because we saw those studies decades ago and now suddenly they're, willing to share that information, not just share it, but promulgate it, and push it into out in front center. So, yeah.
Well, serotonin, believe it or not, has a similar structure to the psychedelics. And serotonin goes into melatonin, which goes into DMT, dimethyltryptamine, which is what they're looking for with ayahuasca. So every night you make your own natural psychedelic, I talked to kids when I worked with drug education or I had a drug treatment program stopping marijuana and tobacco, or I talk about access the pharmacy within. These things wouldn't work if we didn't have receptors for them in the brain,
right?
And there's something natural that looks like it. So I do Joe Dispenza week-long meditation things, and he has us get up at 3 a.m. So a lot of people in spiritual practices, different religions, they actually get up at 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock to do the DMT wave and feel like that's like the God molecule, they call it. But you can access it without having to take anything. Just access it yourself and eat protein, because you got to have protein to make the serotonin, to make melatonin, to make the DMT.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting. About accessing it yourself. And as a kid, I could make myself hallucinate, like without taking anything. Like I could, focus really strongly on something, like a light, and I could give myself hallucination. So I don't know what.
Kaleidoscope does that with music or something. You can give your skip, get to that altered state of consciousness. So there's different things you can do. You don't have to take anything. You don't have to spend any money. You can have a fun time by yourself.
Yeah. And then you're not.
I love God so much. I have a blast with God. It's like,
that's awesome. Yeah.
I do prayer treatments in my if people want them in my practice as well.
Oh wow. Very cool. What do you see with that? Have you seen?
Well, you know what? I see, first of all, a lot of hope, because all throughout the Bible, it says, God says, I will heal you. And Jesus teaches you, ask and you shall receive, knock on the door, it's open. I often ask my students, how many of us don't knock, right? my first question I always ask them, if you go to an oncologist, he says you have cancer and you're going to die in 3 months, what do you think happens? They go, you die in 3 months? Yeah, if you align with that, if he becomes your God, then yeah, you'll die probably in 3 months. They actually did an interesting study of people that had women were getting biopsies of their breasts. And the residents didn't know whether or not they had cancer. And they asked them, do you think you have cancer? If you have it, do you think you'll beat it? Or do you think you'll die soon from it? You know, what else? And inevitably, those who believed that they had it had cancer. Those that believed they didn't have it. Those that believed they'd get better did. And those that believed that they died wouldn't die quicker. So, you know, it's you
believe power of mind.
Yeah. So when we believe those teachings to me, like we believe gravity, then we'll have a whole different world. That is what I believe, you know, that to me, God's real. The promises are real. I've seen miracles more than I can even talk about here. They're incredible things that happened. So of my patients. Yeah.
That's beautiful. Yeah.
You go into an oncologist, there's no hope. We're gonna try, even though only 5% do it. You could be one of the lucky ones, you know?
Oh, I know. When my father got diagnosed, they pretty much told him, like, they made it like he was gonna die that night. He actually said to them, he said, you're telling me he's like, how long do I have? Is it like 6 hours? And they said, well, you know, we don't know. I mean, it could be, you know, a few weeks. It could, I mean, they were being pretty, but they were like, no, it's not 6 hours. Not like that. And he said, well, you're telling me to get my affairs in order. How do I know? You're making it sound like it's going to be now. and they do. That is what they do. They really do. They scare you. So, and of course, I think that could be a self-fulfilling prophecy. It could end up.
Absolutely. You know. In Russia, they don't do that.
Really?
One of the things I think is very interesting about, oh, we'll go kick Russia, this and that. They have a different consciousness that they teach over there. And especially in medicine, I've talked to Russians about this, but I met a psychiatrist who's here, but he was a Russian doctor. And he actually was a surgeon when he was young. He was going to be a surgeon. And one of his first patients, they cut him open and there was cancer all over. They shut him and they said, now go tell him nothing's wrong with him. Go have a good life. And like 5 years later, he's walking down the street and he sees the man and he runs towards him and goes, hey, I'm doing great. I'm so happy I didn't have cancer.
And he never told him.
They never told him that they had cancer because they know the power of the mind.
That's I have chills. That's crazy. So even then, when he saw this the patient, he just
Thank you.
What?
No, I'm sorry.
That's okay. So even then when he saw the patient later, 5 years later, he never said anything?
No.
Oh, that's amazing. I know I've read that, you know, most people have cancer or something like 5 times in their life and never know.
Yeah, but we get cancer all the time, you know, our brains just go after them. If we've got to slow the meat, you know, the biggest killer is stress.
Yeah.
It decimates the adrenal gland. And you don't focus on yourself, you're too discombobulated or whatever. Right. Also with the adrenal gland, it pulls your vitamin C out and that starts disintegrating your collagen, which is in your blood vessels. So now your blood vessels are more likely to be damaged and that's what causes the heart attacks and things. So it really goes back to stress. And I did a podcast once on the consciousness of disease because diseases, people with cancer are very different personality than those with heart attacks.
Really? Well, what would you say is the difference in the personalities? I mean, that does make sense to me. I've heard them say like Cancer's anger turned inward. Yeah.
So I remember that a scenario when we were going on rounds and the Cancer patient going, "Oh, Darsa, you said you'd bring me a Coke an hour ago. I don't have it, right?" And then if that same situation, you go in the heart attack ward, it would be like, "Hey, where's my Coke? I want it now." You know, so very different personality types that it shows up.
That's fascinating. I mean, it does make sense, but it's fascinating.
And it biochemically makes sense. You know, it's
sure. You're releasing the adrenaline, epinephrine, and it's all in the and the parasympathetic versus sympathetic. Totally. Yeah. That's very, but it is fascinating to think about. All right. Yeah. I mean, we don't think typically that way. We think of it. So I'm still curious about Russia. They don't tell their patients.
Well, I asked patients about that. And they said, "You never tell somebody they're going to die. Is this something we never do?" Which is a good thing, because you know what? That's between you and God.
Yeah.
When people say, "Am I going to die?" I go, "Do you want to die?"
Well, I mean, we're all going to die. No matter when and how.
Well, I had one patient who came to see me and she said, "I'm very spiritual." I said, "Okay, well, if you're very spiritual, you know you co-create with God. So tell me, why are you creating this?" And she was getting upset with me, but I wanted to tie her conscious mind, kind of like what Perry Mason does on, you know, did you do it? Yeah. So I said, "Why are you doing this? Why are you doing it?" And she was getting upset. And then finally I said to her very calmly, "Go, so tell me, how's your relationship with your husband?" She goes, "I hate him. I want out." And so her subconscious mind told her what was going on. She did die. I did do prayer treatments and try to change her diet. But, you know, I see this. I mean, I'm so super conscious, and I am so aware of things around me. I'm an empath that I look and I'm fascinated by these things. You know, I mean, not in any negative way, but that's really fascinating, you know, it's type of thing. So it's when you have that attitude, then you love all your patients to come in, and you know that it's a blessing that you get to help them every day.
Sure.
And it's a blessing for me that I have these students that are curious, and I have a medical library, and I learned all about these products from 1930 and went through spent all this time in these trainings. They have 300 different products at company. So and I don't use just them. And there are times that you need a drug too. And I recommend that when needed. So I'm just very blessed. And that's how I feel about everything that I'm doing. And it's funny. I always ask my students, "What did you see in here?" And a lot of them will say, "Dr. Lefty, they went to all over looking for help. And you said, you know what? There's something we can do here." And they actually got better. So they believed, but they said they believed you. Now, I don't go making false promises to people, but I do believe that there is that God, our creator, would not leave us with a cure. And a lot of times that cure might be right in front of your face in a plant that's growing right in front of you. You never know.
Right. That's beautiful. Yeah. Wow. I love how much hope that breeds, because I feel like we're often fed with so much fear. And, the fear is to sell, pills and treatments and rather than believing in the power of their nature and consciousness and creator. So I love that.
When I went into the university, a lot of what I said to myself every day, "God forgive them. They know not what they do." You know, I even got hit like this by a professor once in the face, saying, "Don't tell people you know things they don't know." And I'm like, where did that come from? I thought we were good friends, you know? It's just fascinating. Same thing when I brought Dr. Latipo, who's been speaking, you know, telling people that the risk benefit of the COVID vaccine, is it worth it? And he's looked at the mathematics and things of the every study, and their reaction of, no, you can't take my belief system away from me. You know, it's they're entrenched in that. And yeah. I just learned to say, you know, God forgive them. And I just do what I do. And I focus on my students and my patients. That's what's important to me. I don't really care what other people think. I don't care what they do. If they want to, and it's funny, some of them have they have vaccine injured kids now, and they come to me now, and they're so resentful of helping them. But it's like, I don't even care of all the nasty things you've done or said. That's not, you know, in my church, we had a saying, what you think about me is none of my business. What my mm-hmm. business is helping any person I can help to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I'm into that. Well, thank you so much. Tell everybody, if you have anything else you want to leave us with, please do. And tell everybody how they can find you.
Make an appointment with me. The phone number is 954-262-4550. Press 0. They take my appointment. They'll, if they mention your show, they'll get a $50 discount coupon that I have. For my visit, because it's usually $150 for the visit and then a free follow up. And if you mention to me, you don't mention it to the girls. I'm the one that has the coupons to give out. So if you right. mention that you heard me on Courtney Turner, I will gladly give you $50 off the price of the visit.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So, all right. And so they can find you at, so this is,
this is my email and this is my phone number for my business. And, I don't take the appointments on this phone, the number I just gave, because I work at the university. I don't make anything on any profits on anything I do at the university, not the supplements, not anything. I'm fortunate enough. I have a good job and a good salary. And then, this course, like I said, is a fundraiser for Moms for America. And I think they're a great group, and I'm going to be doing other things. And again, it says it's $125 because that's a regular price. If you put Moms 25, you get $25 off.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting me. I love all the work you're doing, and keep up the good work. I know you and your fiance, you go from I admire people like you so much because you go from conference to conference, and none of it's easy for us to do all that, you know, and it's such a blessing, all the friends I've made and people I've met. So thank you for having me on tonight.
Likewise. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here and for all that you're doing. Really. Yeah. This was so informative. So thank you. I look forward to seeing you again.
Yeah, you too. God bless you. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
You too. Thank you all for watching and listening.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.